Hello everybody, my name is Owen, and this is One's Gotta Talk for Wednesday, 2nd of March, 2022. First episode of March, in a way, and obviously the first in quite a while because I didn't obviously record last week's episode, in a way, so it feels like an eternity, but obviously, finally, we are probably talking about a bunch of new devices as always, as it's being gadget talk. We got new phones. Mobile World Congress has happened in Barcelona, which means plenty of new phones have come out and some interesting developments in a way. For example, Qualcomm released the Snapdragon X70 5G modem, which apparently they claim is the only 5G modem to offer to run on all 5G frequencies from low band to millimeter wave as is, which is pretty impressive. That's what's coming out at Mobile World Congress, so that's pretty cool. So as I said, you'll probably be surprised to know Ford is splitting its electric and ICE, you could say, internal combustion engine businesses into two separate divisions, kind of, or two separate businesses, kind of, allowing for either subsidiary to operate at a faster speed. Apparently, it's for efficiency reasons, which is pretty interesting. So that's pretty cool. And as I said, we got new phones also, so we're going to definitely talk about that later on in today's episode. Obviously, first, I want to address what's been happening this past week. If you've been following news, Russia has invaded Ukraine. Obviously, you can say it's a special operation. If you live in Russia, it's basically a special operation. But for all of us, we know that it's basically in a crisis between these two countries. Obviously, I would probably not want to talk about politics on this podcast, but all I would say is I just wish for peace, and that obviously that nothing bad happens, or that hopefully that innocent people don't die or suffer that much, that there is peace in this world and no war, because the last thing we'd want after COVID and climate change is innocent people dying and obviously being affected and displaced, which is again sad. As I said, I digress. We wish for peace, you know, so that's how it is. No war, that'd be better in a way. And again, I don't usually touch on politics as much as I can, but this is the issue of humanity in a way, and wherever people are suffering, wherever people are affected, I kind of have to mention it or point it out, sort of, that, you know. Anyways, without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? So first thing we got to talk about is Apple, and we've kind of been hearing rumbles that Apple's going to be launching new Macs and iPhone SE. The new iPhone SE could be coming out very, very soon. And now Apple has announced that they're doing an event on March 8th, next Tuesday, basically, at the usual time, usual place. It's going to be a virtual event only, and it's not an in-person event due to COVID, obviously. We've just experienced the Omicron variant, so it'd be stupid to do an Apple event in person. I'm probably gathering that they'll probably do the September event in person, but oh well. So they're going to do an event virtually. Now, they're going to show, obviously, this is a spring event, so as past tradition, they're going to show off new iPads, new Macs. So expect a new Mac Mini, MacBook Pro, MacBook Air potentially, a new iPad Air maybe, because we've had that in 2020. So that's due for an update in a way. And Apple will show off the new iPhone SE, a third gen. And again, it could come with a whole bunch of features, including 5G connectivity and a Touch ID home button. I don't know how they're going to pull that off, but I guess that they'd still offer Touch ID. I mean, part of me thinks that the new iPhone SE could look an awful lot like the iPhone XR, if you've had that, or the iPhone 11. So it's going to be like that in a way. So that's pretty interesting, but cannot wait for next week, for next Tuesday. It'd be pretty exciting nonetheless. And then the second thing I want to probably touch upon before we jump into all the new phones. Google's Pixel 6a and Pixel Watch has kind of been leaked in a way, according to a source from Android Police, two unique devices with code names Rohan and Blue Jay. Now, if you remember very well, and if you listened to my previous episode where I talked about the Pixel Watch, Pixel Watch's code name is Rohan. Now, these two code name devices, kind of given their secret names, have popped up in a specific American carrier's inventory SKU system. You know, they see the inventory, And we don't know which provider. It'd probably be the one of the big three potentially. Now the code names have popped up, so it kind of raises the point that the Pixel 6a and the Pixel Watch could be coming very, very soon. Now the listings, now the SKUs have obviously shown in the inventory where they checked out the listings. We purportedly showed that the Pixel Watch will be available in three colors: gray, black, and gold. Will be available 32 gigs of onboard storage in a way. Pixel 6a, on the other hand, will come in black, white, and olive green, like the Pixel 6 series, and feature 128 gigabytes of storage. This is all we know in a way. Now, we don't exactly know much more than this, other than that it is coming for pretty much. And I probably would assume or guess that it could be launching hopefully by May in time for Google I/O, which could be the case in a way. But it's exciting to see that Google is planning to launch a Pixel Watch, given that we have had the Galaxy Watch 4, which has really bolstered Google's wearable OS, and obviously their own Fitbit. So the technology could be coming to Pixel Watch, and again, it'll be taking on some of Google's recent strengths in wearables. And the Pixel 6a looks a bit exciting, given that it's the affordable brother of the Pixel 6. It'll come with some features of the Pixel 6, but part of me thinks that they'll probably launch it a few months before the Pixel 7 series comes out. So this could be interesting, nonetheless. That is. Let's just move to EVs. Ford is planning to split its main automotive business, as is, into two divisions. One which will feature all its typical petrol and diesel vehicles in a way, or its internal combustion business, and another focusing on EVs. So this is interesting. It was rumored, and people were surprised at why would Ford would, and myself included, I was surprised that Ford would be looking to split its main business into two different divisions, essentially, or two subsidiaries, completely separate, sort of isolated from each other, but under the Ford brand. Now, interestingly enough, Ford is sort of going to maintain its one company, but they'll have two complete divisions. One would focus on EVs and one on internal combustion vehicles. So you're probably wondering why are they doing that? Apparently, their justification is that it's a necessary move to compete with companies like Tesla and EVs, especially. And that obviously, if internal combustion development is mixed with EVs, it's going to be sort of a recipe for disaster. And Ford will not be able to take on its EV startups. So the idea is that the Model E kind of that is, this is the division that's been going to be called the EV division, Ford Model E, and then the E, and then the internal combustion unit, so the ICE division is Ford Blue. So Ford Blue will focus on the on all the petrol and diesel vehicles that Ford is known for, the EcoBoost engines. It'll still focus on that as it is, as a separate entity kind of, but again under the Ford company, sort of as it is, as it's been for a long, long time. And then the Model E division, which is focused on all EVs, autonomous vehicles, and services. Interestingly, now they have mentioned that they have kind of mentioned that that both divisions will share technology, will share software technology that are developed from either division. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But the fact that they've really split into two divisions is interesting, given that there's been obviously pressure from investors to be like, why don't you make the EV business its very own its own company, sort of away from actual Ford business. It would make a lot of money straight off the bat, but obviously it'd be a nightmare kind of for Ford. Obviously, we really cutting an arm sort of the business. So I think the strategy makes a ton of sense. We'll have to see how this fares down the road, especially with Ford's journey to EVs kind of, and how it'll work. I think the Blue Division would obviously keep its well profitable ICE business, you could say, with the F series pickup trucks, the diesel ones. It's very popular. I think it'd be stupid for them to obviously divert all their resources and research teams and attention to just EV versions. It's a logical move. It's quite rational. I mean, in fact, a Edmunds analyst said that this is, quote, radical and rational, which is again very smart in a way. But also, as I said, having a dedicated EV division will mean that they'll put more emphasis on making better quality, you could say, better quality, faster and longer range EVs kind of. because, as I said, the ICE folks wouldn't have to focus on EVs, sort of. You let the electric folks do the electric stuff right, which I think it makes a hell of a lot of sense, if you ask me. So, pretty cool if that is. And if we're already talking about EVs, let's talk about this cool car that's been this concept car. Polestar's shown off a brand new concept car, you could say, called the O2, which is basically like a coupe, a two-seater coupe car, supposed to be fast, all electric, and all that, which is pretty cool. To start with, it's built on a bespoke bonded aluminium platform that will be used for the Polestar 5. And the looks are based on the Precept, which is the previous concept car that Polestar has offered, which is pretty cool, in a way. So it's kind of a sports car, and it's a coupe. It's a cool-looking sports car that Polestar would actually make if they could create one of these products. It's a convertible, which is pretty cool. It's a convertible, so that, and being a concept car, it's got a glass top roof, so it retracts into the trunk. Hence why you don't get two extra seats to the back, so you lose the back seats for that roof, for that sunroof. And on top of that, you have recycled materials, so recycled polyester and aluminium, apparently, that could be recycled down the road in the future. And you have a built-in cinema, and you have a built-in video drone, or built-in drone, basically, that pops off the car, letting you take cinematic shots while you're driving. That sounds pretty cool. Again, it's a concept. It won't actually come out in the real world, but it looks pretty cool if you ask me. I think Polestar is obviously creating these concepts to see what they can do as a company. Obviously, some of the things they have here won't actually go into production cars in the future, but again, they're already exploring what they can do with these electric cars. And it looks nice, though. We don't know the range, we surely don't know the performance, and we don't know the aerodynamics involved in this car. Again, being a concept, it looks cool, and again, they're seeing ideas. They're obviously looking at ideas with these cars and what they can do. But I'm pretty sure they'll obviously offer some of the functionality of this concept in an actual production car in the future. Obviously, they have to try to sell as many of the actual sedans and crossovers. Obviously, sports cars don't make a lot of money, so this being a concept is pretty cool. I like the idea of a drone being like in your sports car. You can pop a button and it goes off and it let you take cinematic shots while you're driving on the highway, on the freeway, or on the French Riviera. I'm kind of tempted. This is, again, it really, you know, it's the thing. This is the thing about EVs. It's turning cars from just this thing that you can drive to sort of an experience, a living quarter on wheels, if for lack of a better word. So it's pretty cool what Polestar has brought to the table, and it's pretty interesting nonetheless. And now we're going to talk about everything that came out at Mobile World Congress. First, Oppo. Now, Oppo is obviously known for their camera technology for their phones, which are all affordable and good value for money. And now they're obviously back with another innovation, this time fast charging, super fast charging. Oppo have shown off at Mobile World Congress 240 watt fast charging technology, dubbed 240 watt Super WooC flash charge. Apparently, according to them, and this is their claim, you can charge a 4500 milliamp hour battery in just 9 minutes. So you can literally top the phone halfway through in 3.5 minutes. So you plug in it and it literally starts charging instantaneously, in a snap of a finger, 3 4 minutes. It's obviously quite useful and game changing. And it's interesting given that 150 watt fast charging, they've mastered it, obviously. They've mastered 150 watt fast charging, and that technology will actually come to select Oppo, Realme, and OnePlus phones, obviously, given that those two other brands are Oppo's sister divisions. That 150 watt fast charging will be available on those models from those other brands later this year, which is pretty cool in a way. That is, and interestingly enough, you're probably wondering what fast charging. It's great, but obviously there'll be degradation with these phones. Now, Oppo have mentioned that they have all added safety functionalities like adapter overload protection, battery fuse protection, flash charge condition judgment, charging port overload protection, and battery overload protection. These are actual things that Oppo has added. Basically, they've added lots of software and physical checks and balances to make sure that the 240 watts going to the phone doesn't completely bust and break the phone, if you know what I mean, or absolutely destroy the battery in a way. Apparently, Oppo have said that the 240 watt fast charging is able to maintain 80% of its capacity after 800 charge cycles, which is pretty interesting nonetheless. What do you think? You think this technology is useful? Will it really be a game changer? Do let me know. You know my socials are in the show notes. But again, it's a pretty cool looking technology nonetheless. And if we're already speaking about fast charging, 150 watt fast charging, I mentioned obviously that Oppo and their sister brands are going to bring that technology to production phones. Realme has teased 150 watt fast charging already for the GT Neo 3. So the GT Neo 2 is already out, kind of. It's a cool phone, but the GT Neo 3 is coming out pretty soon. And Oppo and Realme have, and it's crazy how I said Oppo and Realme, but Realme have obviously shown off 150 watt fast charging. Now the GT Neo 3 also will have the Dimensity 8100 chip, which is pretty cool. In a way, so it's an interesting mid-range phone for a lot of people out there. In a way, now according to Realme, the 150 watt fast charging functionality, with that you'll still have 80% battery capacity after 1,000 charge cycles. So that's pretty interesting to state. But again, it's pretty cool to see what we have here with this technology. All right, now we're going to talk about all the new phones that have come out at Mobile World Congress. First off, we're going to talk about Oppo. Oppo have released the Find X5 and Find X5 Pro. Finally, after various teasers and leaks, in a way, the Find X5, the first one, which is one of the two X5 sort of flagship phones. So the X5 is kind of a normal flagship, you could say. It has a Snapdragon 888, 8 gigabytes of storage of RAM. 256 gigabytes of storage, Android 12 out of the gate in a way, a 6.55-inch OLED display, no LTPO capability, unfortunately, on this one, so that sucks. 120 hertz refresh rate was great to have, and it's got a matte back in black and white, which is pretty cool for a flagship, and obviously no greasy stains, which is nice to have. You have a 4800 mAh battery on the X5, 80 watt fast charging wired, which is pretty cool in a way, and you get 30 watt wireless fast charging. No IP water and dust resistance, so that's something to keep out for. You have a 360 degree antenna, so you can get better 5G capability. And now you're wondering about the cameras. The Find X5 has a similar setup to the Pro. It's got a wide and ultrawide sensor, two IMX766 sensors, which are pretty interesting, which is cool to have. It doesn't mention the megapixel, but obviously it'd be a pretty two big sensors, kind of a regular and ultrawide, in a way. And you get support binning, pixel binning in a way. The regular camera has optical image stabilization, OIS. Along with that, you have a 13 megapixel telephoto lens, which is on the camera. It's on the back, you could say. And then obviously you have a 32 megapixel selfie camera with an 81 degree field of view. So that's something to keep in mind. In a way, the Find X5 will cost €1,000 starting for the spec of 8 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage. It'll be available on March 14th in Europe. So if you want to get an Oppo flagship, you know what to get. The X5 Pro, on the other hand, there's regular X5, and the X5 Pro is the ultimate. Now on the X5 also, the cameras are paired with the Mary Silicon X custom processing, image processing chip, the ISP chip, a custom chip from Oppo, interestingly. And you obviously get some features from the Pro also. The Pro is interesting here. The X5 Pro is basically Oppo's ultimate flagship for 2022. You have a 6.7-inch AMOLED display with LTPO capability, 1440p display, 100% DCI P3 color gambit, interestingly, and 120 Hz refresh rate, which is pretty nice to have. 1300 nits of brightness, IP68 water and dust resistance, Gorilla Glass Victus, and you get a ceramic back, which is pretty cool, instead of matte, which would help with cooling and all that kind of stuff, which is nice to have. Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 out of the gate, interestingly. Android 12 is available, obviously Oppo's skin of Android ColorOS 12. 80 watt wired fast charging, 50 watt wireless fast charging, 5000 mAh battery, which is nice to have in a way. And you get a whole bunch of features, including battery health engine, which apparently improves your battery life in a way, making sure it does not degradate that quickly because you have a very fast chip and a fast display. And that could really sink into the, it could really suck the life out of the battery, if you know what I'm talking about. That is, you have USB-C, obviously, which is cool to have. The same 360 degree 5G antenna on the X5, Dolby Atmos supported stereo speakers, and yeah, it's got what more do you want from a flagship from Oppo, which is again pretty cool. The cameras are worth talking about. So, as I've mentioned earlier on, the X5 Pro comes and the X5 come with the custom ISP, the Merisilicon X, which apparently allows them to take better photos theoretically, and obviously do more better processing and run all the AI on the photos and videos, which is pretty cool. You can do 4K ultra night video, basically night mode video, which apparently gives you better noise. Which gives you less noise in a way and better contrast than typical night mode video shots, which is pretty cool to have. And you can use it on the wide and ultra wide sensor, which is pretty awesome in a way. And you get up to 120 decibels of dynamic range. I don't know what that figure is, but I'm basing it off whatever I'm reading here. On top of that, as I've mentioned a few weeks ago, Oppo obviously has a collaboration now with Hasselblad, and that's obviously related to software. And speaking of software, they have a feature called Hasselblad Natural Color Calibration, which relies on the color sensor on the cameras at the back, which is roughly 13 channels now, and that improves. And obviously, it is Oppo's processing, so it gives you again overall more vibrant shots and better shots at night, which is pretty cool to have. On top of that, the wide sensor regular has a 5-axis OIS, which is pretty cool to have, as it is the first of its kind on mobile, interestingly. So you get the lens and sensor shift, which is pretty cool to have, and apparently it improves handshaking up to 3 degrees, which is substantial. Again, you won't notice it until you take a lot of photos overall. The ultra wide, on the other hand, has 110 degree field of view. Now, on the X5 Pro, you have a 50 megapixel ultra wide, same IMX766 sensor, like on the X5. So this is for the wide and ultra wide. The ultra wide, as I've mentioned earlier, has 110 degree field of view, which is pretty interesting. 30 megapixel telephoto lens, which is again a nice to have sensor for those particular shots where you'll probably need it. It will probably come in handy. On top of that, you have the IMX709 selfie camera on the front, which is pretty cool in a way. And it has, again, thanks to that Merisilicon ISP chip, you could do better software processing. So for context, when you take a group selfie, the camera is normally 80 degrees field of view, and it would obviously zoom out to 90 degrees field of view. So again, it's those little features that go a long way. So those little things that go a very, very long way, if you ask me. In a way, so this is a solid high-end phone. Obviously, you're able to find an Oppo X5 Pro, that is, in a way. I mean, Oppo's flagships are not sold as widely as, say, Apple or Samsung, so. But again, it's a pretty cool phone for what you're getting here. You get a really good, you get good camera processing in a way for the price, but I mean, it's pretty expensive. The Oppo X5, the Find X5 Pro from Oppo will cost 1300 euros. For 12 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage, and will, like the X5, will be available from March the 14th. So again, it's a pretty interesting flagship, nonetheless. While we're already talking about flagships, Honor obviously has launched new flagships, the Honor Magic 4 and 4 Pro, and it looks like obviously Honor's back with a bang, given what they're bringing here. Polar abracadabra in a way. You could say it's magic in a way. The Honor Magic 4 and 4 Pro offer a whole bunch of cool features in a way. To start with, if we go look through the specs, the Magic 4 regular has a 6.81-inch curved LTPO OLED 120Hz display with a resolution of 2,664 by 1,224. And on the other end, on top of that, the regular Magic 4 has the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 along with 8 or 12 gigabytes of LPDDR5 RAM, 128, 256, and 512 gigabytes of storage out of the gate, a 4800 mAh battery, 66 watt wired charging, which is impressive itself alone, you could say, 12 megapixel wide selfie camera. On the back of the phone, you have 50 megapixel wide, 50 megapixel ultra wide, and 8 megapixel periscope telephoto camera, which is interesting, along with laser autofocus and a flicker sensor, which is pretty cool in a way. And you can record videos on this phone at up to 4K 60 frames a second, which is impressive. Stereo speakers, so that's pretty cool to have. IP54 rated for water and dust resistance. A built-in in-display fingerprint sensor. It's got Bluetooth 5.2, 5G out of the gate, which is good to have compared to, say, Huawei phones, which don't have 5G, ironically. And you have a USB-C port, which is pretty cool. On Android 12 is available on this, along with the Pro, in a way. Along as for the Pro, on the other hand, that is a Pro in its of itself. You have the same 6.81-inch curved LTPO OLED display with a higher resolution, but same refresh rate, but higher resolution of 2,848 by 1,312 pixels, which is nice to have. Same chip like the regular Magic 4, same amount of RAM as the regular Magic 4, but you get only 256 or 512 gigabytes of storage on the Pro. Now, on the Magic 4 Pro, the real difference kicks in with the battery and cameras, which makes it a Pro in and of itself. First, the battery and power game. The Magic 4 Pro comes with a 4600 mAh battery with 100 watt wired and wireless fast charging. Now, that's impressive. Wired and wireless at 100 watts, both. Wireless at 100 watts just basically makes this the fastest wireless charging phone out there, the most powerful phone with wireless charging out there, in a way that it has the fastest wireless charging out there compared to the competition. There obviously is issues with heat and all, but I'm sure Honor has figured it out, and they probably will sell you a custom charger that will let you charge it up to that speed, which is impressive. So in return for getting a little smaller battery, 4600 mAh, you get that beefy fast charging capability. And on the flip side, with the cameras, you have 50 megapixel wide f1.8 sensor, 50 megapixel ultra wide f2.2, 122 degree field of view ultra wide camera, and a 64 megapixel periscope telephoto camera, giving you an aperture of f3.5 with 3.5 times optical zoom and up to 100 times digital zoom, which is impressive, with laser autofocus and flicker sensor. The periscope telephoto lens is impressive itself, given what they're offering here, and a 12 megapixel wide selfie camera with a 3D depth camera, unlike the regular Magic 4, which doesn't have those. It just has a single selfie camera, but the Pro obviously has a depth camera for letting you do proper face unlock, you know, Face ID mode, but on Android, which is impressive in and of itself. So that's pretty cool. And again, you get three microphones for recording, so that'd be good for video recording, so you can pull in more audio from all places. And unlike the Magic 4, the Pro has IP68 water and dust resistance, an ultrasonic in-display fingerprint sensor, and Bluetooth and 5G is available here, which is impressive, and USB-C, and comes Android 12, like the Magic 4. And it apparently comes in glass and vegan leather, which is pretty impressive. Now, the features are cool. Now, what Honor has obviously worked on is the software, so they obviously added software functionalities, making it sort of a really flagship killer in a way. that is. So they've offered ultra fusion, they call this camera technology on the Pro, ultra fusion photography. So the idea is that they have software, and I've watched the live event the other day, and the way it works is that the software does the software plays a role with the hardware, the sensors, enhancing ultra-wide photos, reducing the warp on ultra-wide photos, which is impressive, improving night mode, and it's pretty cool. And again, it's like the S22 series and other major flagships this past year, is those little things that those little features and bits and bobs that will go a long way. And obviously, it's got algorithms that give you a really crispy camera for what it is. So that's pretty impressive, in a way. And for the display, it does support IMAX Enhanced, so it gives you HDR 10 Plus and DTS:X, which is pretty cool. And you can record a 10-bit 4K 60 frames a second log, giving it more color and more vibrancy in those videos you shoot. As it's coming up to iPhone 13 Pro standard. In fact, they've compared to the iPhone 13 Pro series. That's probably matching the iPhone 13 Pro in a way, because the 13 Pro has cinematic mode and Dolby Vision recording, which is impressive itself. Here you're getting video recording, but you can get IMAX Enhanced on this, so that's pretty cool. The 3D sensor, sort of, that's in the front camera sort of area, lets you do also interesting things, including a feature called Just Say to Me. And the way it works is it sort of adjusts the microphone so that the audio is going straight to your ears, because it's again it's sort of seeing the proximity of your ear. Obviously, the sensors, the 3D sensor, and the proximity sensor on the phone is obviously measuring, and obviously, it'll shoot the audio to your ear so no one else can literally hear the audio leak. If you've had that situation where you're talking to someone on the phone and they're literally so loud, talking so loud that people are sort of almost close to you can hear you, can hear the other person's voice on the phone so crystal clear. So that's a real issue in a way. And as I said, the Honor Magic 4 Pro has, and with the cameras also, the wide and ultra wide come with advanced 7P lens. Again, nice to have, like the lens situation on the S22 Ultra. It's nice to have on a premium phone, and obviously improves the picture quality indirectly. You have wired and wireless 100 watt fast charging, 1920 hertz PWM LTPO display. Apparently, it is one of a kind. There's no other phone out there with this highly tuned, fast display, you could say. That's pretty impressive. Now you're wondering about the price. The regular Magic 4 will start at 900 euros, which is impressive, $1,000 now nearly, so pretty good for the prices you have here for the base spec. And the 4 Pro will be available from 1099 euros, so about $1,200 to $1,300. That's a lot of money. That's almost coming up to the same price bracket as the S22 Plus and the S22 Ultra. But you're getting a better value than the S22 Plus, that is at $1,200, $1,300. You got top-notch cameras with good processing. Snapdragon 8 Gen 1, you don't get that for the S22 Plus in some regions. I hope Honor does release this in the Middle East. It's probably going to be a better value than the S22, if you ask me, in a way. High refresh rate display, better dimming, in a way. Fast charging, unlike anything we've seen in the market, in a way. So, pretty impressive when you compare it to the competition, especially what other Android flagships give you for the money right now. And some compromises they have to do with the overall spec sheet here. But it seems like Honor is obviously pulling out, again, it's pretty magical, if you ask me. I mean, it's the latest in their line of sort of, good value flagships, kind of. So, but again, it's a pretty imp the Pro is pretty impressive. It packs a punch compared to what we have seen in the past couple of months. So pretty impressive. And now for more relevant phones that everyone can actually afford and doesn't call don't cost an arm and a leg and a kidney. We've talked about the flagships. Now I've got to talk about the lower end and mid-range phones. The Poco M4 and X4, the Poco M4 Pro and X4 Pro have launched, obviously from Mobile World Congress. So that's pretty impressive. The X4 is this is based on the this you could say the fourth generation of Poco phones in a way. Now the X4 Pro is pretty cool. Basically, it's Poco's take on the Redmi Note 11 Pro. You get the same processor, the same display, the same cameras, the same battery life in a way. You get the same battery in a way, but not the camera. But the Poco X4 Pro gives you 67-watt wired fast charging, allowing you to top up the phone in 41 minutes. Actually, this could be the phone that actually I would buy, given that Poco is a really cool brand, if you ask me. And you get a charger that can charge at up to 67 watts, which is nice to have. For the cameras, you have 108 megapixel main sensor, a ISOCELL HM2 sensor, which is pretty nice to have, along with an 8 megapixel ultra wide and 2 megapixel macro, 16 megapixel regular selfie camera, which is cool. You get a headphone jack. Surprise, surprise, you get a headphone jack, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, dual stereo speakers, IP53 water and dust resistant, splash resistance actually, not dust resistance, so you won't be protected from dust, but it'll protect you from splashes, which is nice to have. An IR blaster like the Redmi Note 11 Pro, a side mounted fingerprint sensor, it's a little button kind of on the side. Micro SD card supported, which is nice to have, and NFC. It doesn't mention about 5, so this is going to be 4G only, so there's no mention of 5G here, which is, but it says it's a 69 Snapdragon 695 5G, so I'll have to check if this supports 5G though. That'll be a bummer if you ask me. So there's no 4G variant of the X4 Pro, so it's just 5G only, so that's impressive. That is, and you get 5G here, so this is similar to the Redmi Note 11 5G in a way, so that's impressive. That is seriously impressive. Okay, the one thing you'd probably want to keep in mind if you've seen the Redmi Note 11 Pro 5G is, yes, it still will only record it up to full HD at 60 frames a second, so it's kind of a deal breaker if you're into content creation and you're gonna get this phone, so keep that in mind. But yeah, aside from that, it's a really solid phone, and you can't go wrong with what you have here in a way. That is, so it's pretty cool. The X4 Pro will start at 300 euros for the base spec, and obviously, if you want more RAM and storage, the 8 GB variant, 256 gigabytes of storage, will start at 350 euros. So the base spec is $330 ish, and then the bumped up storage option, double storage basically, before around $400. That's pretty cool, and it comes in typical Poco colors, blue, black, and yellow. That's pretty cool. On the flip side, we have the M4 Pro, which is pretty cool. So it's the new M series phone. I think the M4 has already been out. Okay, this is the first M4 phone in a way. So the M4 Pro, this is the 4G variant, so there's no 5G here. But the M4 Pro has a 5,000 mAh battery, 33-watt fast charging. A Helio G96 4G chip, 90 Hz LCD display instead of the M4 Pro 5G that gives you a 90 Hz FHD plus display OLED, and only a 64 megapixel, 8 megapixel, and 2 megapixel camera. So that'll be the main ultrawide macro sensor instead of the 50 megapixel main and 8 megapixel ultrawide on the M4 Pro 5G. So there's a 5G variant. This is the 4G variant, which is pretty interesting. Anyway, and if you're curious about getting the 4G variant, it's obviously going to be cheaper than the 5G one. The 4G variant will start at 220 euros for the base spec, sort of 6 GB of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage, and double the storage for about 270 euros or $300 ish. So that's pretty cool in a way. And obviously, these two new phones will be available hopefully next month or so. Hopefully by the end of the current quarter, you could say. So again, these are pretty interesting affordable phones, that is, and it's cool to see that we're getting a lot of high-end features coming down to phones that are for the X4 Pro is something I'd actually look into if Poco's figured out the software and the performance element of the X4 Pro. I'd definitely get this because I've read up reviews on Note 11 Pro 5G. It's good for some folks, but apparently its performance is not, the cameras and performance is not really up to mark for being a really true value for money, so that's something to keep in mind. And while we're already speaking about affordable phones, Nokia has shown off new affordable phones, three of them in fact, or you could say two of them. the C21 and C21 Plus. So that's pretty interesting. Obviously, Mobile World Congress has happened, and so Nokia has obviously shown off some new wares in a way. The C21 and C21 Plus are obviously Nokia's affordable phones. These are some of the cheapest Nokias you can get that run Android, was pretty impressive. The C21 is an interesting phone, being it's very affordable. You're gonna lose on a whole bunch of features, in a way. You get no water and dust resistance, but you get 6.5-inch display with a metal frame and toughened glass, so it's kind of like plastic, but again, it's tough. You get a Unisoc SC9863A chip, not even a MediaTek, a Unisoc chip, which is strange, in a way. That is 2 or 3 gigabytes of RAM and 32 or 64 gigabytes of storage, a 3000 milliamp hour battery, and yeah, 5 watt chargers in the box at least, compared to say Apple, that don't even offer a charger in the box for $1,000 phone, but it only charges at 5 watts. Now you've got to appreciate fast charging. Honestly, if you get any Android phone, you gotta have fast charging. 5 watts is great, but it's anemically slow. It is, you, I mean, it's a punishment in 2022 to get a phone that can only charge up to 5 watts. It's great, it's better than nothing, but it feels like a punishment if you ask me. Interestingly, you get a single 8-megapixel sensor. I don't know why I want to laugh, but again, it's an affordable phone, so it had to cut so much out. So much has had to be sacrificed, but you get an 8-megapixel main sensor and a 5-megapixel selfie camera, so that's pretty interesting. We don't know about the prices, but it'll probably be under $150 at least. And the C21 Plus, there's a Plus variant. The C21 Plus is a nicer version of the C21. You get a metal chassis, IP52 rating, so that's for water resistance to an extent. 6.5-inch 720 by 1600 display, 20 by 9 aspect ratio, so you do get a big display in a way. Both phones run on Android 11 Go, which is interesting. The phone is powered by a Unisoc SC9863A chip. It's a very custom, random, big chip that I've never heard of. It's pretty inefficient, but it's a random chip that I've never heard of, but it's pretty interesting regardless. You get 2, 3, or 4 gigabytes of RAM, along with 32 and 64 gigabytes of storage. I am guessing that obviously, if they're selling it for emerging markets, it's going to be quite flexible. So there will be two storage options of each amount of RAM. So probably 8 SKUs potentially of this phone to bring it to the most amount of consumers in emerging markets. Because some folks don't need 8 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gigabytes of storage. They just need a phone that has enough storage and RAM to get by. You get micro SD card slot support in case you run out of all that storage. And for the cameras, you get a 13 megapixel main and 2 megapixel depth. Don't expect world-changing DSLR quality photos out of this. I don't want to be negative, but don't expect game-changing photography here. But you'll easily get some good shots out of these phones. 13, along with the, and on top of that, you have a 5 megapixel selfie camera, which is nice. Interestingly, you get a 10 watt charger, so it does charge a little bit faster. And weirdly enough, you have two versions of this phone with batteries. Now, if I obviously start to double this would possibly there would be there are already 6 variants of this phone, and that'll be 12 variants potentially. So there's a version of the C21 Plus that has a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, another one with a 5,050 milliamp hour battery. Now, I'm guessing that if they're going to offer as many as 12 SKUs of this phone, and again, it is probably to do with market to market. So in some markets, they could afford to offer more storage and more battery, and in some other markets, they could offer a smaller battery and smaller storage to make it an appealingly affordable phone. So I can see where Nokia is coming. I can see where HMD Global is coming on with the range of specs. Weirdly enough, it's an affordable phone in a way, but you're literally they're sacrificing a lot in terms of performance. Now, we don't know the price of this phone, or we don't know how much it'll actually cost. But if this is like 300 dollars, then avoid it like the plague, and just avoid it like the plague, that is. So yeah, so it's an interesting phone, don't get me wrong. And it will be for those who want to afford, couldn't really afford a phone, but now they can. They probably have $100, $200 to afford it. And I probably do know a fair few people who could probably use a $200 or $100 phone. If this is $100 to $150, then it probably is good value in a way. But obviously, any more beyond that price, and avoid it like the plague. That's me being honest. I do think the C21 would cost well below $99, and that'd probably be the ideal price. But again, let's see. Obviously, as the phone comes out in other regions, and obviously more people buy the phone. So yeah, it is a really interesting phone, nonetheless. And finally, as we've had Mobile World Congress happen, finally, Realme has obviously released, shown off the GT2 series, the Pro and the regular, which is impressive. Now you're probably all wondering how much it'll actually cost for those living outside of China. Now the GT2 and the GT2 Pro will be launching in Europe and the UK first, and they'll be available in India, Latin America, Middle East, and Southeast Asia in the coming months. So the GT2 will start from 449 euros, which is interesting, so about $500 for the phone. And the GT2 Pro will start at 649 euros, around $725, and 599. So yeah, that's about $700 in Europe. And if you're in the UK, it'll cost about 600 quid or 599 pounds. So that's about $804. Pretty interesting. £600 for a GT2 Pro. It's pretty interesting. I mean, that would make it about, in Bahraini dinars, that would be way below 300 dinars. That's pretty good, actually. That's good value. I mean, given the performance, the batteries, it's a good value. If they bring this to the Middle East, it would the GT2 series, it would sell like hotcakes. The GT Master is kind of popular. I've seen it in a fair few retailers and stores, and there are some people who bought the GT Master. The GT series, the GT2 especially, could be very, very popular in this part of the world. It could knock the S21 FE off its throne, you could say, at such a price tag. So, pretty impressive, if you ask me. So, again, pretty impressive in a way. Alrighty, we've crossed the 47-minute mark. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. I mean, including all the new phones we've had, and obviously Ford splitting its EV and internal combustion businesses into separate divisions. What do you think of everything you've heard right here today? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Sayed_Marwan99. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening right now, be it on Facebook, be it on Pocket Cast, Apple, Google, Spotify, even YouTube. I think YouTube could offer podcasts one day if they figure out the code or something. Apparently, they're working on that. Wherever you're listening right now, subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, which will be interesting in a way. And share this to your friends and family. Send the link to this episode on WhatsApp if you can. Forward it to as many friends and family as you can. Yeah. Till next week, this is your Bummer signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, take care, stay safe, stay strong, and yeah, we'll be back next week with another episode of Mom's Got to Talk. You know what to do. Support, subscribe, all that good stuff, and and just have a wonderful day. All right. Thank you for listening. Ciao.